the Financial Sense Lifetime Planning Program. Now, here's the Financial Sense News Team.
For this episode, we are going to dive right into the evolving world of taxes and what you can do to plan ahead of them. I'm Ryan Poplava, CEO of Financial Sense Wealth Management. And with me today is one of our lead advisors, Aaron Wiegman, who has helped hundreds of families plan ahead for retirement using various retirement planning strategies that we're going to be talking about here today. Welcome to the show, Aaron.
Ryan, thanks for having me.
Well, let's talk and just dive in right away here. We're going to talk about reasons for some of these strategies that we're about to go into. It's taxes. What's coming? We already know a little bit about that. There's part one of the $4 trillion infrastructure plan, which was announced a couple of weeks ago, called the American Jobs Plan by the Biden administration, which will pay for infrastructure with an increase to corporate taxes from 21% up to 28%. And with an increase in the global minimum tax paid from 13% to 21%. This episode, we'll be focusing on some of the potential taxes. We don't know quite yet that President Biden has proposed last year while he was running for election that may be presented this month with the phase two, which actually was announced last Wednesday, as the American Family Plan, which President Biden said will seek to pay for in part through tax increases on wealthy individuals. So according to the Wall Street Journal article back in November 9th, 2020, it was called How Joe Biden Tax Plan Could Affect You. This was by Richard Rubin. Here are some of the possible tax increases the wealthy can anticipate might show up in the American Family Plan we may hear about later this month. So here are some of the ideas that were discussed. The top rate would increase from 37% to 39.6%. There would be new limitations on deductions. There's been a lot of discussion recently in articles that the Democrats might be able to bring back the SALT tax. That's allowing higher deductions for state taxes, but that might, again, have limitations on it based on income. There's the imposition of the 12.4% Social Security tax on wages above $400,000. Right now, there's a limit. Up to, I think, around $130,000. So they could be looking at opening that up for individuals that make more than $400,000. High income earners of pass-through businesses that don't pay the corporate tax would lose a break they got in 2017. Capital gains taxes could be raised from 23.8% to 39.6%. Again, the top rate for household income over $1 million. Possibly scrapping the step up in basis for inherited assets or for those individuals, again, above certain thresholds. This modeled a proposal during the Obama administration that was fairly complex, which also included a lot of tax exclusions to that. So again, things could get complex here, but the biggest certainty we know of, Aaron, is that more taxes are coming for the upper and upper middle class wealthy. Aaron, based on the potential tax increases we just spoke about, what are some of the issues people may have with the tax deferral bucket, and what strategies are people using to address this?
Yeah, Ryan, I guess just in general, I mean, when you wind up looking at the allocations of someone's assets and how they wind up getting taxed in general, you basically have three different ways of how that happens. You know, you have your taxable bucket where as the assets wind up growing, if it's income, dividends, capital gains, you name it, as that bucket winds up growing, so does your tax liability inside of that. So you wind up getting taxed on that currently. So if you wind up making any sort of money in that taxable bucket, you get a 1099 at the end of the year, a little love letter from the IRS, and they wind up making you add that to your taxes, right? And then, of course, you wind up having the tax deferred bucket. You know, inside of that bucket, we have, you know, our traditional IRAs, 401ks, SEPs, profit sharing plans, you know, you name it, where basically we wound up taking our income at, you know, today, deferred that money until a later date in the future, and then said, based on whatever that tax calculation is at that point in time, that's how we're going to be taxed at that point. So Ryan, let me ask you a question on that. When it comes to, let's just say hypothetically, I were to give you a loan, what would you want to know about that loan that I'm giving you?
I'd want to know what's the interest on it. And if there is interest on it, are these type of loans? Can I get some tax deductions for some of this? There's often ways of doing that when it comes to mortgages, but with a loan, how much do I got to pay you back? And what am I going to be charged for paying you that back?
Yeah, right.
And so, the terms, how long do I have to do it?
Yeah, so those are pretty important things. I mean, so when you think about it, what if I came back to you and I said, all right, based on this loan that I'm about to give you, depending on what my financial situation is, when I need that money back, I'll let you know what that interest rate is.
Well, I can't plan for that.
Right. Is that not what we're doing with that tax deferred bucket?
Exactly. We don't know what the taxes are going to be at that point in time compared to where taxes are right now.
Right. So it's not as though we can really have that crystal ball say what exactly that tax calculation is going to be when we wind up taking that money out. And so a lot of folks, as they're looking at their tax diversification across the board, the last bucket that we haven't talked about yet is the tax-free bucket. And that's where, you know, we're gonna talk today about how we might be able to get some of that money from that tax-deferred bucket into that tax-free bucket using things like Roth IRAs, Roth conversions. Maybe we wind up using qualified charitable distributions or a strategy that we like to call kind of an IRA maximization or a leveraged IRA. So those are the three strategies that we're going to talk about a little bit today and how we can kind of coordinate those and use those and maximize someone's IRAs and distributions and all the complicated things that come along with that.
Well, that sounds good, Aaron. Let's dive into the first one you mentioned. Let's look at Roth conversions. What are some of the reasons a retirement plan would call for a Roth conversion?
Well, a lot of our clients, a lot of people out there, and if you wind up thinking about where tax rates are going to be going in the future and to the tune that you had just spoken about at the start of the show here, if you think that taxes are going to be going up in the future and you want to take advantage of the lower tax rates right now, it might be compelling to take some of that money that you have in an IRA and move that into a Roth IRA at this point in time. Now, Ryan, how does that actually work? So when you wind up looking at doing a Roth conversion, you're essentially every single dollar that you wind up taking out of the IRA and converting it to the Roth, it's going to be current income today. And so in 2021, if you take out $10,000 and you convert it into your Roth IRA, that's an extra $10,000 of ordinary income that you'll have to pay taxes on today. So the way that this winds up working, you know, if you look at early in retirement, if you wind up retiring and you're in a lower tax bracket just right off the bat, a lot of times it works really well if you wind up taking a look at these Roth conversions early in retirement before you wind up taking your minimum distributions, maybe even before you wind up taking Social Security at this point in time, to help you out, just take a bite out of that tax deferred bucket. That might be the biggest bucket that you wind up having in your tax arsenal right now. So when you wind up looking at the reasons as to why someone might want to do that, if you start taking a little bit of a bite out of it now versus waiting until age 72, when you wind up having to take out your RMDs on your IRAs, if we can start tapering that back, now we don't have to take out as much for our RMDs at age 72. And if we are able to shift that over into a Roth, there are no minimum distributions that you have to take on the Roth in the future. So it's really nice to be able to just kind of spread out and start working on that tax diversification. Because if you have most of your funds sitting in that tax deferred bucket, at some point in time, you're going to have to pay the piper. So do we look at it as though we want to pay that now, or do we want to wait until later when it's a big question mark?
And Aaron, you can use financial planning software to optimize that strategy because you've already talked about maybe looking at doing it before you're taking Social Security income, before you start taking your required minimum distribution. You know, that's a lot of numbers to plug in. You guys use some software to optimize this strategy?
Yeah, so there's two things that we really wind up using when we look at the strategy to see if it makes sense for somebody. Now, We aren't CPAs, but we can work in coordination with your CPA to see how this winds up making sense for you individually, right? And so there's one software that we wind up looking at where we plug in the tax return from the year before and we make any sort of adjustments or estimates to the changes as far as your income based on that. And then we can kind of plug that in to see if we wind up taking any sort of a Roth conversion and take that extra ordinary income, what kind of an impact that's going to make on your taxes in this current year. Now, it's good for this current year as far as like estimating that and getting that to your CPA and agreeing that that kind of a Roth conversion makes sense. But what also is pretty powerful is being able to use some of the financial planning software to say, if we're going to be doing this same type of strategy and we're going to be doing it year over year, what kind of an impact is that going to make on our overall strategy during our lifetime? So now when I'm age 62, but now at the end of my plan, when I wind up passing away at age 90, what kind of an impact is that going to make on my plan?
Looking at the Roth conversion, are there reasons this strategy may not apply for some people? Are there drawbacks to it?
Sure. I mean, as a word of caution, as you wind up making these Roth conversions, yes, ordinary income is going to be due when you wind up converting that amount. And as you wind up converting your IRA into a Roth IRA and you take that extra income, there's other things that are going to, you know, creep up on you. All of a sudden, you know, maybe more of your Social Security is going to be taxed. That could cause your Medicare premiums to increase. Your dividends, capital gains, that could throw you into a higher bracket with those. You could have that extra investment tax, that extra 3.8% on there. So as we wind up looking at taking extra amounts for that Roth conversion, we need to be cognizant of the fact of, you know, how those certain limits are going to impact the rest of your taxes too. And so we have that conversation around that.
And of course, phase outs of deductions and other limitations, like you already mentioned, you know, everything gets affected when your adjustable gross income hits a certain level. So definitely, it sounds like a lot of tax planning involved with the Roth conversion. Aaron, let's give our listeners an example of how you've seen this Roth conversion utilized in a financial plan recently, as the last year or so.
Sure. Let me think of, so let's talk about Bill here. So Bill is 62. He's retiring here soon. He has about $2 million in an IRA. He's got pension funds. He's planning on holding off on taking Social Security until age 70. And then he'll probably wait to take his RMDs until he's 72. He's got an extra $1 million that's in taxable funds that he'll wind up using right now as far as his current income needs right now to, you know, to give him some extra money on top of his pension. So he's gonna start paying taxes today on his conversion, but we're gonna keep his regular income pretty low. And so over the next 13 years, as we wind up looking at the financial planning software, we're gonna wind up taking those conversions over the next 13 years up to maximizing that up to his 24% tax bracket. And as we wind up doing that, now after 13 years, we've converted all of his IRA funds. And now after that, by age 75, he's not going to have any more money inside of his tax deferred bucket. So at that point in time, his income is going to drop considerably. And so just by doing that and just looking at the difference between doing that versus doing absolutely nothing, by the end of his plan, he'll wind up having, you know, based on the estimates of, you know, where our current tax brackets are right now, he'll be able to have an extra $600,000 in his ending portfolio just because of the tax efficiency that we've done over time there, as opposed to not doing anything. And then, you know, really only 2% of his overall estate would wind up being tax-free to his heirs. So it made a big difference as we wind up, you know, forward thinking out there. Now, Ryan, don't get me wrong. There's a lot of changes that could happen between now and then, right? And that doesn't work out for everyone. So for instance, you know, if we're looking at other clients that on the flip side of that, if they're a little bit later in life, if it winds up being, you know, a little bit later in life and you haven't really thought about taking some of this money out of an IRA and moving it into a Roth, does it necessarily make sense for us to be paying the higher amount of taxes right now if you're not necessarily going to have the time to make up the loss of
the earnings, catching up towards, you know, the cost of dealing with the taxes today. And then again, like you said, we don't know the crystal ball. What's going to happen 4 years from now? Is Biden still in president? Is the Democrats taking complete control of the Senate, you know, and passing more tax plans? You know, we don't know.
Exactly. So I guess on the flip side, as opposed to making that Roth conversion happen, I've spoken to other clients where we said, you know, maybe it doesn't make sense because if you try and do that Roth conversion right now and you pay the 24% in taxes, then you wind up paying the state taxes on top of that, are we going to make up the over 30% in taxes that you're paying on that? Or would it be better off to just go ahead and grow that, take the minimum distributions out, and then pass that on to your kids who might be in a lower tax bracket.
Yeah. And, you know, I've heard from quite a few clients who say, you know, my kids are going to get this cash. I'm not worried about them having to pay taxes on it. Well, then there's the other clients who said, well, I don't want my kids to have to deal with this or my beneficiaries. So I'm going to deal with it now. I have enough. You know, it depends on it. It's a personalized decision.
And I think that's a lot of, you know, any of the strategies that we're talking about here, a lot of this comes down to what's going to be important to you as the client. You know, there's not one strategy that's going to make sense for everybody. And that's what we have to talk through and see if that really winds up making sense.
That's a good point. Moving on, Aaron, to your second tool. We're talking about charitable tax distributions. Some of our clients who are approaching the new mandatory distribution age on a traditional IRA of 72, maybe they don't need the income. And maybe they're not very happy about paying taxes on that distribution or seeing their income going up and then being pushed into higher tax brackets. You know, sometimes, you know, there's actually quite a few people I know don't like paying more in taxes. So what do you do with a charitable tax distribution?
Yeah. So when you look at qualified charitable distributions, yeah, Ryan, you're right. You have the clients who haven't taken out any minimum distributions out of their IRA, and then it sneaks up on them where, you know, it was 70 and a half, now it's 72, and now they have to take out, you know, approximately in that first year, it winds up being a little bit shy of 4% of whatever that IRA is worth, right? And they don't have any need for the minimum distributions that they're taking. But there are some of these folks that do take care of charities, right? So whether it be a charity or their church or, you know, whatever it is that is important to them, they wind up making these contributions to them anyways. And so for a lot of clients, especially after the new tax changes kind of came into place, a lot of clients aren't itemizing. So a lot of their charitable distributions or charitable contributions, they didn't even get any sort of extra tax benefit to that. And so by doing this qualified charitable distribution, essentially what you're doing is instead of taking the distribution yourself and taking it into your own personal checking account, you can make a qualified charitable distribution to the charity of your choice. It has to be a 501c3, but you can make that distribution directly to that charity. And you wind up getting the benefits of not having to take that income. You're planning on making that charitable distribution anyways, or charitable contribution to them. So why not go ahead and get that tax benefit and make it directly out of your IRA? There's no itemization. There's no AGI limits on, you know, contributions that you can make to a charity by using that. But it makes a whole lot of sense for people who aren't going to need those minimum distributions and are making those charitable contributions anyways.
So Aaron, if I take the distribution personally, let's say I forgot about this option.
Yeah.
I've already got the check. It's already come to me, but let's say I want to make that contribution to the charity. Does that qualify as a charitable tax distribution at that time?
No. So the qualified charitable distribution has to be directly from the IRA itself.
Okay. That's important.
Yeah.
Are there certain charities that don't qualify for this strategy? I think you already mentioned the 501c. What might not work?
So yeah, a lot of people, private foundations, donor advised funds, those types of things have become more popular, but those don't qualify. It has to be a qualified 501c3. So, you know, think of your traditional charities, you know, your Red Crosses, even churches wind up making sense. My mom winds up making her contributions to her church, you know, she makes her minimum distributions. She was making those directly to the church out of her own checkbook, but we wound up switching that over once she wound up reaching 70 and a half.
And are there limitations to this strategy? I heard there's certain dollar amounts maximum that are allowable. Do you know what those are?
So it can be up to $100,000 per person. Now the caveat on that, it has to be $100,000. It has to be from each individual's account. So it's not as though you can have, you know, the husband make the distributions from his account, you know, for the full $200,000. That doesn't actually work. It has to be from each individual's account that it has to be from. And the other interesting thing is as we increase the minimum distribution age up to age 72, the qualified charitable distribution age, you can qualify for that still at age 70 and a half.
Aaron, let's give our listeners an example where you see this strategy being utilized in a financial plan recently.
So just a simple one. I mean, as you wind up looking at one particular client, Sandy, she's 72. She has Social Security, pension, those things taken care of, basic income for her needs. She has a trust account. She has a Roth account, you know, things for some of those other flexible income needs that she might have. And she was giving gifts directly to her church from her checking account. And now one time a year, what we wind up doing is we're going to make a direct qualified charitable distribution to the church in the amount of the RMD. Now, what's also interesting is that, you know, because she does have that charitable intent in mind, she is going to leave the charity as the beneficiary of the IRA as well, because the charity is not going to pay any sort of taxes on that IRA either.
And do you see charities as beneficiaries of IRAs more frequently?
I think so. I mean, especially as you wind up looking at the difficulty, well, I guess the more complications that they wound up making with the recent SECURE Act, where they limit the distributions out of IRAs, the time period to non-spouses to 10 years. And so you kind of have this timetable that your kids may have to take the money out over 10 years, which winds up could create quite a tax burden for them. So if you have the option of which assets it is that you want to leave to your kids versus leaving to a charity, if you have any charitable intent, it does make a whole lot of sense to leave IRAs to a charity because they're not going to pay any taxes on it.
And again, that just leads to reviewing the financial plan. What are the goals of the individual and what's the legacy they want to leave behind?
Right.
Aaron, let's move on to the final strategy you mentioned, the leveraged IRA, or what some call the IRA max, which is essentially using distributions from the IRAs to purchase life insurance policies. And in some cases with investors with large estates, you can hold that life insurance in an irrevocable life insurance trust called an ILIT. Describe to us, what are the instances behind that and why you would utilize some of those strategies?
So if you think about what you can do with the assets that you have, and if it does wind up being important for that individual to maximize the assets that they have on hand, it could be advisable where you wind up saying, you know, Ryan, I'm not really quite sure where taxes are going to go. So maybe I don't want to be so aggressive with doing these Roth conversions, but I do want to use some sort of a tool that might be able to help my beneficiaries pay for the taxes that might come due on this IRA that I have on hand, right? So in this kind of a strategy, you can actually take the distributions from the IRA, and instead of just putting them into some sort of a taxable account, where you wind up seeing this a lot, the minimum distributions that you take out of the IRA, it just winds up funding something into a taxable account because they don't have anywhere better to put for that. And so remember what we were talking about before is that the bigger we wind up growing that taxable account, we're also not doing ourselves any favors as far as being more tax efficient, because that's going to just increase our tax liability, right? And so the idea would be is if you wind up taking these distributions from the IRA and instead of putting them into a taxable account, you wind up putting those same distributions into a life insurance policy. And so that life insurance policy, that could wind up leveraging up those distributions to eventually wind up giving more to your beneficiaries or giving more to charity. And it's a very tax efficient way of doing that because that death benefit winds up being tax-free for you.
So Aaron, using this strategy, it's not too complex. You're using essentially the IRA distributions to buy insurance. So you're taking that, it's the premium on the policy you're able to building that tax-free death benefit. What are some other strategies? I mean, we talked about a little bit about an irrevocable life insurance trust, but what are some other options with this strategy that you've seen can be utilized?
Well, I mean, if you look at buying this life insurance policy, there are people when they wind up reaching retirement age that, you know, maybe they have older parents who might have had some sort of a long-term care need, and they want to be able to make sure that their long-term care needs and the expense of that wind up, you know, being taken care of. So a lot of life insurance policies have some sort of extra long-term care benefits that are associated with those as well.
So riders.
So extra riders on that, yeah, kind of stuff. So you kind of coordinate some of those tax benefits with maybe potentially this need in the future for some sort of long-term care benefit. You know, that's something that we wind up doing a lot. You know, maybe the IRA, they do have that charitable intent, but they don't necessarily want to disinherit the kids. So they might leave the IRA as beneficiary, but those distributions that they pull out, maybe they wind up buying a life insurance policy that winds up replacing the IRA.
And in utilizing this irrevocable life insurance trust, the ILIT, it seems like, from what I've heard, that enables individuals with large estates who might want to have control over how those proceeds get distributed. Maybe there's some issues. Maybe they're worried about some of their kids having a divorce, or maybe some kids are not in a good place financially and maybe don't know how to deal with money. You could essentially have maximum control, right? Through some of these ILITs, essentially giving the trustee powers to decide with the trust policy who the beneficiaries are and accordingly what your preference is on when they get those benefits.
Sure. I guess, I mean, if you're going to be using an ILIT on that, I mean, really the big thing is getting that death benefit outside of the estate.
Ah, right? Yes.
You know, so if you're going to get that death benefit outside of the estate because you are concerned where estate taxes are going to go, which could very well be an issue in the future. So as you wind up seeing the current estate law, and maybe we wind up seeing those thresholds lower from, you know, 11 million, or what is it, 11 and a half million down to maybe 3.5 million, if not even lower, you know, that could be more of an issue over time. And so if you're looking at this kind of a strategy, maybe it would make sense if you're going to purchase that life insurance policy, you put that into an ILIT so that it just, you're going to gift those premiums to the trust. The trust winds up purchasing the life insurance policy. And then since it's completely hands-off, it winds up being completely outside of your estate. So when you wind up passing, that's not included into your estate at all. That winds up going to your beneficiaries, estate tax and income tax-free.
That's a big one. Or let's give the listeners an example where you've seen leveraging IRA distributions now and how that's affected a financial plan that maybe you've worked on recently or in the past.
Yeah, so I would say the recent one that I spoke about just in the last mention was Sandy, who is leaving the money to the charity. She is leaving money to the charity or the IRA as beneficiary. She's using her minimum distributions. She's giving giving the current qualified charitable distributions to her church at this point in time. And she also has a life insurance policy that she's funding at this point that winds up being about the same amount as the IRA. So the IRA is going to wind up going to the charity. The life insurance policy is going to be tax-free, and that's going to wind up going to the kids. So the whole premise of this kind of came down to the fact that when she wound up retiring, she had a term life insurance policy that had a conversion privilege on it. So she didn't have to qualify for any new life insurance at that point in time. But for her, this wound up making all kinds of sense in the world. She's able to take care of the charities. She's still able to take care of the kids. The only person I guess it's only the IRS that wound up missing out on that one.
Oh, yeah. Sorry.
Yeah, that's too bad. So we were really able to kind of, you know, maximize for her what she could do with her estate, you know, meet the needs that she wanted to meet, and really just understand what's important to her. The other one that I thought was kind of interesting too was that a couple of years ago, I was working with this gentleman. He just reached RMD age. At that point in time, it was still 70 and a half. But he had been giving money to a couple of different charities. One of them was the Wounded Warrior Foundation, right? And he was in a situation where he had a great pension. He was getting Social Security already. He had rental income coming from properties. He had one daughter that he was going to wind up giving these rental properties to. And he's like, you know what? I'm going to give her plenty, but I do want to take care of these charities. And I don't have any reason to be taking these RMDs myself. And so the strategy that we wound up coming up with was that he purchased a life insurance policy that he wound up gifting to the charities, because the charities do like the fact that, you know, they wouldn't mind his giving to be kind of perpetual, right? And so what we wound up doing was he gifted the life insurance policy to the charity. He makes qualified charitable distributions every year to the charity. In lieu, they wind up paying the premiums on the life insurance policy. The IRA that he was using, that winds up going to the charity too. So the charity is going to wind up getting double benefit from this because they wind up getting the life insurance policy and the IRA proceeds. Wow. And then he also used a portion of those proceeds too, because he's like, well, I don't necessarily want to completely disinherit my daughter. So why don't we wind up doing a portion of these, the another life insurance policy, and I'm going to give her some tax-free benefits as well. It was a pretty neat case that we wound up working on there.
Sounds like it really worked out the way he wanted it. Well, then we've reviewed three strategies that take a look at, like you mentioned, the three different buckets that every investor, as they're doing their planning, has to deal with or can consider. And I've seen many investors that are with us today, we're managing their money. It's mainly IRA money and traditional. So, you know, they're definitely starting to get concerned about, as they hit 72, what their tax liabilities are going to be. But if you plan ahead, you can really utilize some of these strategies, minimize taxes, and increase benefits potentially. Let's talk through those strategies for our listeners. If you are interested, if you want to take a look at your financial plan, are some of these strategies some you can utilize? What's the best way for someone to reach us, Aaron, to discuss their strategies or a possible plan?
Well, if you want to reach out to me directly, you can always email me at aaron.wiegman@financialsense.com. That's aaron@financialsense.com. And of course, our toll-free number, Ryan?
888-486-3939. And also you can contact us via our financialsense.com website. Thank you, Aaron, for sharing those strategies. And we look forward to hearing from our listeners sometime soon. Thanks for listening.
The Financial Sense News Hour is for informational and educational purposes only and should not be considered as a solicitation or offer to purchase or sell any securities. The investments, investment strategies, and investment philosophies discussed or presented on the News Hour each involve their own unique risk factors, which are not discussed on the show. Responses to listener inquiries are based on the personal opinions of the Financial Sense staff and do not take into account listener suitability, objectives, or risk tolerance. Financial Sense News Hour and its parent company shall not be liable for any financial losses that result from investing in any companies mentioned in Financial Sense or arising out of the use of any material on the News Hour. Please be advised that you invest at your own risk.